From Migration Media, this is Migratory Patterns. I'm your host, Mike Shaw. I'm breaking new ground this week as I'm welcoming my first married couple on as guests. Partners Kara Gleason and Liam Cunningham are both teachers living in Beijing, and I'm excited that they've agreed to share their story with us. It is, at the same time, both typical and really unusual. As if choosing the expat life wasn't a big enough change in one's life, imagine falling in love almost as soon as you get to your first new country. In one sense, taking a big life-changing leap may seem easier if you're thinking of doing it just after you've taken another one. But all too often, overseas relationships, especially those that come about during one's first year abroad, they flame out. It's simply too intense of a period in a person's life, and there's way too much change going on for things to turn out for the better. This week's guests, Karen and Liam, are the exception that proves this rule. The couple met early on during their first stint as teachers in South Korea and have been together ever since. I really love speaking with them. I'm a real romantic at heart, and their story really got to me. I hope you enjoyed as much as I did. Please sit back, relax, and enjoy my conversation with Kara Gleason and Liam Cunningham. Kara Gleason, Liam Cunningham, welcome to Migratory Patterns.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Where is home?
Right now, it's...
It's our apartment.
Beijing.
Beijing.
Yes.
Okay. So, from your accents, you are clearly not from the same place of origin.
No.
I'm originally from Manchester, England.
Okay.
And I'm from St. Paul, Minnesota.
St. Paul, Minnesota, Manchester, England. Those are geographically very far apart.
Yes.
How did you come together into a single unit?
In 2011, both of us moved to Korea in different months. I came in December.
And I came there the end of October, so 6 weeks apart, I think.
Yeah. We met in January of 2012.
It was January the 17th.
Oh, God.
By the way, this would be great if you argue, because conflict is good.
Yeah. This is normal life. This is fun. Yeah, we met in a town called Daegu, South Korea.
Where we were introduced by a mutual friend that you'd done yoga with that day, right?
Yeah.
What was the town again?
Daegu.
Daegu, South Korea?
It's like a bowl. It's right in between. They call it the armpit of Korea.
Oh, that's so great. Sounds very attractive. It's like New Jersey.
Yes, exactly.
That's why I moved there.
Yeah. So it's halfway between, like if Korea was an L, Busan is the end and Seoul is the top, and Daegu's right in the middle.
Yeah. So was that the place that each of you first went overseas to live?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, wow. So your first place to go to from the UK was to go to South Korea, and your first place was from the US was South Korea, and you met there.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And this was 2011, you said?
We moved the end of 2011.
Okay.
But we met in 2012.
So let's start one at a time. Kara, how did you make the decision to go to Korea?
It was the idea of moving abroad got me through my last year of university.
So you hated it so much and you're just like, I got to get out of America. And
just get me out of here.
Really?
Yeah. So I spent in university, I did about, I think, 5 months, almost 6 months in East Africa. So I did, it was kind of an untraditional study abroad. So we started in Addis, Ethiopia, and we overland trekked all the way down to Cape Town.
You studied abroad while trekking?
Yep. So when we trekked, we had to hitchhike. We went in the back of trucks.
This is a shady study abroad program. Oh. Like, oh, yes, let's go do some classes. And then when you get there, they're like, yeah, by the way, you have to hitchhike. There's no buildings. There's no books. You have to get from here to there. That's your education.
The shadier, the better. So it was my literature professor, or like, she was the head of the lit department at my university, and she convinced me to go. 15 of us, I think, 19, 20, 21-year-olds in the middle of nowhere in all sorts of places.
People can't see my face, but I am like a literature program.
Yeah.
By the way, you have to hitchhike from here to there halfway around across the continent. And it's a literature program in Africa.
And we came from Nebraska.
This sounds like a con job. Like this is like you would hear there's a Nigerian prince at the end and you got to get there and give him your money.
And he's got me $5 million. Right? So, but there we had to do, so we had 4 or 5 classes. So I had to do yoga. I had to take Swahili while I was in Kenya and Tanzania. I had to do African history and geography and African literature and then a writing class. So the professor had facilitated all these programs while we were there.
Joking aside, that is a phenomenal, sounds like a phenomenal learning experience. It must be something that the professor dreamed up and then had to shoehorn into their literature program. Like, he had to convince them, hey, I teach literature, but wouldn't this be a great thing to do?
She did. It was lots of other people, like, not just literature majors.
Oh, okay.
Mostly literature majors, but not everybody. Wow. It was like just the study abroad program that they offered.
Oh, kind of like as part of the liberal arts education. Yes. I get it. Okay.
Yeah. I went to that typical private liberal arts college.
Oh, very snooty. Where'd you go?
It's called Doane College.
Doane College. Never heard of it.
Tiny little place called Crete, Nebraska.
Wow.
Yeah, very small.
Yeah, well, I'm from New England, so I'm used to all these tiny little liberal arts colleges, but that's a pretty cool sounding program.
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you were there, you did that, and then somehow between that and having to trudge through the last year of university, you were like, I got to get out of here?
So how it worked, I went to university on a biochemistry path and did biochem for the first year and a half and did not do very well. And I had a intro English teach professor tell me I'm wasting my time with science. And then I also had a science teacher tell me that the only reason I'm passing is because I can write lab reports. So I eventually came back from Africa and changed my major to English and powered through the last year to get out of school. And genuinely, the last probably 3 months of school, I was just researching how I could get out of the university, how to get out of America and like make money and not have to like pay my way out, because I was a broke college kid. So there was no way. So Korea was number one place on the list.
So this is actually the one of the things that gets me so, like, I don't want to say angry, but worked up, is that the people in America graduate with this college debt. Oh. And if they come out with – did you have a literature degree you came out with?
Yeah, English Lit.
So English Lit degree, famously, you basically are majoring in Starbucks.
Yep.
So that's your job, and you come out with, you know, umpteen thousands in student debt. Mm-hmm. And then what are you supposed to do? You no one at a tech firm is going to hire you, right?
Nope.
So you got to figure a way out. And you had the wherewithal because you had worked overseas or – did something overseas in college, the study abroad program, you knew there was a world out there to go to.
Yeah, that opened. I think I grew up, I think, looking back in the last 10 years, Liam gets really annoyed because I talk about Africa this one time in Africa all the time. I think in those six months I was there, that changed my entire life more, I think, than any other travels I really did. That made me grow up. It made me understand and appreciate what I had. You know, it was all sorts of perspective that I never knew existed.
So. Yeah, I totally identify with that for two reasons. Number one, I feel like my high school, I learned more in high school than I ever did in college, just because my high school was such a formative, intense learning experience, learned how to learn. And then I didn't realize it at the time, but I took two trips to China, once in October 2000, and the next trip was April of 2001. And I was in Beijing for about a week each time and to some other cities in China as well. And I look back at that now and I just realized that's when I kind of learned. It was in my subconscious. I had no idea I'd ever move overseas, but that's when my brain kind of was opened up to the idea that, oh, there are other places and you could go there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And thrive there, not just be there.
But. Exactly. Yeah. 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 And so then you find this job in South Korea, and what were you doing there?
So I taught English at a Hagwon, which is the after-school program. So I worked from 2 o'clock to 10 p.m. every day. And it was a tiny school. It was only three foreign teachers and then five Korean teachers. And we all took turns teaching the same classes. It was in the middle of nowhere, like close to the mountains.
How many other foreigners were there around?
None.
None.
There were none. I think if you saw a foreigner, you'd go running up to them. Like, hello, where are you from? This is great. It never happened. So if it did, it was exciting.
Well, at least you had good internet.
Yes,
yeah.
I did.
Yeah.
4G before China even knew what that was.
Yeah, yeah. So Liam, how did you get from Manchester, that rough and tumble industrial city, out to South Korea?
Well, I was backpacking through Africa. That's not true. I've never been to Africa. I had planned on teaching abroad from probably about the age of 22. And I did a, like a lot of people do, I did a TEFL program. And, but I had a job at the time that was quite a well-paid job. And I was enjoying it. So I kind of wrestled with still wanting to go abroad, with having responsibilities at home, like having a house to pay for, and never really having the gumption to go for it. But then I think I just got to the point where my job sort of petered out and there was no progression career-wise and I had nothing else to do. So I kind of just was like, why not go for it? But I remember I organized a going away party for myself in the local pub. But my friends, because I've been talking about it for so long, a lot of them didn't go because they didn't believe that I would go, which gives you an indication of how long I'd been spinning that yarn that I'm going to go to. And it was always career as well, just because when I did my TEFL, the teacher had worked in Korea and gave me like a lot of ideas about where I could go. So that was always in my mind that I wanted to go there. But it took a good 4, 5, 6 years before I actually bit the bullet and went.
Really?
Yeah. I'm not as brave as Kara.
I mean, it took me 2 years. Mm-hmm. I mean, I remember I told my, this is a story I told on my colleague's podcast. I didn't so much make a decision to move overseas as I heard the voice in my head. That's how it happened. I heard this voice in my head that said, fuck it, we're moving to China.
And
that's exactly what happened. And I told my friends and it was, yeah, I'm going to go. And I looked at the calendar and it was, I heard the voice in April 2006. And I looked at the calendar and I said, oh, Olympics are in 2008. That's when I'll go. So it was like 2 years and my friends didn't believe me. Mm-hmm. We shouldn't say they didn't believe me, but one of my friends believed me. He's the friend I came over here with in 2000 to 2001. He had lived here in the 90s and he's actually still here in Asia. He was in Shanghai for a few years. Now he's down in Hong Kong. And he knew when I said I wanted to move here, like he recognized kind of the spark. Like, mm-hmm. yes, he's going. Mm-hmm. Like he understood.
It's very visible.
Yeah. And you can recognize it if you're an expat. Like I can see it now. Like I can tell the ones who aren't going to last. And I also can tell the ones who are expats. Well, he saw it in me, but all of my other friends who I'd known for, you know, 10, 12 years at that point, none of them really took me seriously. And after I moved overseas, like I had going away parties, mm-hmm. and then I remember having this tearful goodbye at one of my friend's houses, and she was just like kind of in tears, and she's like, I can't believe you're actually going. And I was like, I've been telling you I'm going for 2 years, and like the last year before I went, I was like having these profound moments, all these mm-hmm. things, like this will be the last time I do this with you guys. And you know, like I'm sure they were sick of hearing it, but they didn't believe it. Fast forward to 6 months after I've lived here, my friend, the one who eventually moved back here to Asia, I was on the phone with him and he was telling me that my friends back home had taken bets to see how long I would last.
What?
And apparently no one would bet more than 6 months. And my friend said that he told them, you guys don't understand. He's never coming back. Like he's never coming back.
That's it.
And I've never gone back and I don't have any... I have no desire to go back. None at all. Yeah. So when you moved to South Korea, did you move with the intention of becoming a teacher? Was that your way to get in?
It was, I mean, at that point, teaching was just an opportunity to get out of where I was. My major was English as well. So it was the clearest pathway for me to get abroad. They would provide a house. I knew that I'd have enough money to be okay, but it was just getting away from me. It wasn't going to teach. That was a byproduct of being there. It was just that I needed that space to think for myself. And it was massively liberating when I got there as well.
Why liberating?
Just because I don't think I'd understood how bored I was doing what I was doing back home. And I think because I did it for a lot longer than I intended to, when I got to Korea, it kind of came crashing down on me how much I should have done this before. And it kind of vindicated everything. I was like, I knew it would be like this. I knew it'd be like this. Like, why did I wait so long to do it? And then it was just having the space where I didn't know anyone was the liberating part, where I could just reset and do what I wanted to do.
So I'd like to back up just a little bit on your story, because you had said that you had had this thought in your mind to move overseas for 5 or 6 years. Mm-hmm. Where did that come from? Did something bring it on specifically? Did you what was the notion you had, and can you identify where it came from?
I'd always, even when I was at university, prior to that, I wanted to travel. I never took any opportunities. My university didn't have the
weird Nigerian prince study abroad, yeah, hitchhike across the continent thing.
Yeah, I'm sure it does now.
Because everyone's doing it. It's the cool thing to do at university now.
Exactly. It was the early noughties. it just wasn't the thing. And if it had been, I would have grasped it with both hands. I say that now. Maybe I wouldn't have.
I don't think you would have.
Yeah. But I did want to travel, but I was a chicken about it. So after university, my friend was the year behind me at university. And he was like, when we finish, we'll go traveling together. So that's a year that I put it on hold. And then my friend finished and he said, well, I just need to earn some money to be able to go and travel. That's another year. And then at that point was when I did the teaching course. But it was just a lot of things getting in the way, and the timing was never right. I always had an excuse that would stop me from doing it. I guess I had to go through that to get to the point where it was all or nothing. I guess that's how I am as a person. I didn't jump into it with both feet. I had to be backed into a corner before I would do it. Which
still stays true for a lot of things.
I don't think that's true now. I feel that I have progressed, that I am a much better person now.
Well, I wouldn't place a value judgment on, you know, you wanting to set things up first. I'll say it for myself. Mm. I identify with what you're saying, because I'm very much the person that wants to have everything kind of, if not planned out meticulously, but at least planned for.
Yes.
Like even this venture that I'm on, Migration Media, like we are really rolling out very slowly because we want everything. Mm. Like I'm all about scalability. Like I want to make sure we have systems in place that support everyone who wants to contribute and participate, and that just takes time. Mm. Even my moving to China, it took more than two years to do it, because I was like, I said, all right, save up this much money. I'm going to have some things at work. Like there were some stock options coming in. There was, if you work for 5 years, you got a paid sabbatical for a month. So I was going to, you know, factor that into my deal, but I didn't want to wait, you know, for my 5 years and then just leave. I wanted to put in like more than 5 years, so I have actually earned it. And because they had this thing that if you did your paid sabbatical and then you just quit your job, you know, you would have to owe them money, because you're supposed to actually, they're basically giving you extra vacation time. So I actually waited a whole nother year to do it, so they wouldn't have even left on that bad terms. Mm-hmm. So like I totally identify with needing to do that and feeling you have to have it before you take a big leap like that.
Yeah. And I guess, you know, you two have spoken about going to, you know, you went to China, Cara went to Africa. That I never had that experience, so I never had that cemented that I could thrive in that environment. Mm. And I think if I would have been more adventurous in terms of travel during my university days, then maybe that would have expedited me jumping in and going abroad.
So you guys ended up in, by happenstance, in South Korea, were you in the same town or the same area?
Same town, but same different neighborhood, like different areas.
Okay, so you were the only foreigner in your area, you're the only foreigner in your area, and did a bunch, did like
he had
Korean
tons of foreigners in his
really?
Area. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
He had a blast.
Shout out to Chilgok.
So you guys meet there. What? How long did the courtship take?
Ooh, well, that was, I think I ran away for a long time.
Yeah, this never sounds good whenever Cara.
Well, I would just say, so across the table, you're very intimidating. I find you, you're frumpy a little bit. Yeah. I mean, I, you know.
Exactly, yeah. I make people run away. Yeah, I mean, it's probably a few months
before I agreed to.
Well, the reason I ask is not because I'm so much interested in the salacious details, but it's like you guys are in your first kind of, we'll call it a posting overseas. Like, you've both gone to your first place. It's a very intense experience. I know the group of people that I hung out with in Beijing, we have an intense, you know, that's an intense relationship. You bond with people so closely. And I know that some people in our group of friends, our circle, you know, they all kind of went out with each other a little bit and everyone had a good time. And it's, it can be very intense. So it's, the people I know from my own experience who kind of in that circumstance, mm-hmm. none of those relationships that I know of lasted. Mm. And I don't know a broader statistics of how that works, but it's just interesting to me that you guys met in your first place and you're still together all these years later.
Well, we were both very mindful of that when we met because...
we had both just gotten out of relationships.
Yeah.
And we both were like, this is my move for me. But why did I meet you? This is not fair. This is not what I wanted to happen.
I'm supposed to have my time.
This is my time. I think I held on to it a lot longer than Liam did.
So. I held on to it for a little bit.
That's all right.
But no, that was definitely in the back of our minds that we were thinking right place, right person, wrong time, because we wanted to experience it all for ourselves. And I felt we stepped back for a little bit. It definitely wasn't, we didn't jump in. It was 4 or 5 months before we actually said that we were
together.
Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, our second date was a speed dating event.
That was fun.
Yeah.
That's so funny.
Yeah.
A Korean speed dating?
Yeah, it was great.
Oh, my God.
It was organized by a friend of...
The charity.
Yeah. So we'd been out on one date and we'd already committed to going to this to help the charity now.
Oh.
And then it was just me sat at a bar watching Kara have multiple dates, which was wonderful.
I got to date some of his friends.
Yeah.
Some of my friends were there. It was good.
Yeah. And they didn't refuse the dates. Even my friends, they were like, no.
I'll take her.
Yeah.
This is the first time I've interviewed a couple on the podcast. I'm interested, as we mentioned before, about that intensity of the relationship and how that gets going. So the idea of connecting with someone while you're living overseas is not just perilous because of that intense relation, the intense situation, but also there's the factor that you might move.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys have moved.
The summer camp love, right?
Right. Yeah. So it's like a summer camp thing, which is interesting because my wife and I kind of met that way.
Oh, funny.
Yeah, So we met 6 weeks before I moved to China.
Oh, she told me that.
Yes. Yep. So, yeah, you know my wife. So she told you this story probably. I tell it better, I think. But no, she does a great job. But if you know you're moving or you know you might move, the idea of a relationship can seem limiting. Mm. And I'm just wondering how that may be factored into – it can make the idea of coupling or partnering with someone more complicated. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering how you approach that.
Well, I think once we got over the fact that it was a relationship we both wanted, right? Probably in the fall of 2012, we were like, okay, are we going to do this? We may as well try. And it was kind of like we'll just kind of chance it. And we started applying for jobs with an agency, like to try and find another place to go.
Teaching jobs.
Teaching jobs, yeah. English teaching jobs. Because we didn't want to go home. Neither of us wanted to go to university yet to figure out if we wanted to do teaching as a full-time position. We really wanted to stay in Korea, but we also, that community is, like you talked about, very transient. And a lot of things seem quite false around you, or can. But it was when we decided together that we were going to move to China. Yeah, I think.
Well, I think the...
And then getting there. That was the other step.
Yeah, once we realized that there was an expiration point on us living in Korea, then it naturally added a pressure to our relationship because...
Got a fish or cut bait, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
We knew there was an exit point, and we knew that we were both taking a huge leap of faith to say that we would go to another place together. And what happened was I went back to England, Kara went back to America, and there was...
We talked every day, and like...
We did, but there was a good 6 to 8 weeks where we were waiting between positions. We finished, and we were traveling in December, and we didn't start our positions in China until February. And, you know, we've talked about this before. I arrived in China the day before Cara was due to arrive.
Because there was a snowstorm in Toronto, so I got grounded there.
I didn't know that.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
So I arrived, and then Cara was due to arrive maybe an hour or so later than me. But then she she didn't arrive. And then I went back from the airport, and then Cara checked my email, and she said, oh, I've been delayed by and I'm doing the air quotes, a snowstorm. And I was like, she's not coming. This is a terrible excuse.
It's like getting left at the altar. Yeah. That is crazy, man.
I had a 24 hours of just being, and I wasn't really in Beijing. I was out in Shijinshan, which is
near the mountains,
a good
very far
50 minutes out of the city. And, you know, I didn't know anything. I just arrived. I was incredibly jet-lagged. And then I thought the reason that I'd moved here, I'd stayed where she was. And then I went to the airport the next day. And again, unbeknownst to me, Cara had some issues with her luggage where she couldn't find it. And no word of a lie, I waited for 4 hours when her plane had landed.
This little fence.
Everyone else had gone through, and I asked them, were you on the flight from Toronto? And went, yeah. And then the flight crew came through, and I was like, she'll be here, definitely. And the guy who'd employed me and Cara was waiting with me, and he was giving me the look as if to say, well, I'm a teacher down. And then I just waited and waited, and then finally she came through, and I was like, I told you. You all didn't believe me.
Well, you waited for
She's
years.
Real.
You're the kind of guy who waits 6 years before you move. Another extra 4 hours
I'd
is nothing.
I'd still be there now. But yeah, thankfully she came.
Wow.
It was a gamble for both of us. Neither of us thought the other one was going to show up.
You know what's so interesting is kind of the way you describe that situation sounds like a marriage. Like entering it, we have to make this decision. Are we going to take the leap? Are we, you know, it sounds like that's what happens. It's the thought process of getting married, which is so fascinating because I don't know if this happened. I don't know if it happened this way for you guys, but for Elise and I, the marriage thing kind of seemed like this weird, logical no-brainer. I mean, it was a big deal, but it wasn't a big deal.
Yeah, it was it was like, we can do it whenever. It's fine.
Yeah, we gotta just sign this paperwork, right?
Yeah.
Like, let's just knock that out this week.
Yeah. But the thing was that was in the back of our minds, and we've talked about since, is was it the place? Like, would our relationship be the same outside of the magical place that was Daegu, where we'd had so much joy and, you know, felt liberated
and excited. And, yeah.
And when we removed ourselves from that, you know, what was our relationship going to be like? Because we hadn't known each other for that long, less than a year when we moved to China. We decided that we would move to China together. But, you know, thankfully it worked out.
So my first, as you're saying that, my romantic knee-jerk reaction is like, yeah, it would have worked out. It would have been great, right? You guys are meant for each other, yeah. But then, you know, the logical part of the brain is like, no, because it's all circumstantial. And, you know, if you're not in one place, you know, it's all time and place and you have to be in the right mindset.
Yeah.
But then I remember my own story with Elisa, and it was not a time – it wasn't a place thing, because we were both – crossing like ships in the night, and we met, and we didn't know we were going to get married, but we knew that that was a person we could connect with and be with.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to say, it sounds so familiar, because you're living in, it sounds so logical that it would be the place, because the act of becoming an expat, moving overseas, causes you to be open in ways you wouldn't be.
Yeah, in your life, it's the biggest jump. Mm-hmm. And then everything else seems maybe like not equal size jump, but you're like, if I can do that, I'll be fine.
Yeah.
Anything else is easy.
Yeah. And just the attitude of being an expat. I've spoken about this with lots of people. Expats have to be open.
Mm-hmm.
You can't be a person that's not open, like not necessarily a total open book, but you got to be open to meeting people and opening yourself up to new people and experiences and relationships. Because if you don't, you're going to be alone, tragically alone,
and
you're not
going to
live. Yeah, you're not going to make it. Yeah.
And that is what I was running from very quickly when I was living in Manchester, because it was just a reduction of people that you see and new acquaintances. I wasn't making new friends. I wasn't doing new things. I was just doing the same thing and gradually reducing who I was socializing with. Because, you know, I'd lived in that part of, you know, where I'd grown up and gone to school. So a lot of the people that were there were my friends from school. But naturally, after university, they'd meet people, they'd move further afield. So it was a very small pond. And I don't think if Cara, maybe, but I don't think if Cara would have met me at that point, if I would have been as open and as happy and as content in myself, whether the attraction would have been, you know, obviously the looks would have grabbed you. But the other things would have, I don't think I would have given off the same
vibe.
Aura.
You are a very pretty man.
Yeah. So, but then when I was in Korea, I remember I met a couple of people and I started hanging out with them. And then as you do, you meet other people, and I got into sport and I started playing football. And then one of those people that I'd met in my first few weeks, I saw her maybe 4 months later when I was out. And she said to me, "You just seem very, very happy." And that it kind of struck me that I was incredibly happy.
Visibly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Emotionally, visibly. For the first time in a long, long time, I just felt so happy. So maybe that was a factor. I don't know.
It sounds like it was a factor.
Yeah.
I mean, moving overseas, even if it didn't cause you to, quote, open up, it still was just you in a new place, completely changing your circumstance, mm-hmm. and having to, I don't know, live by your wits or whatever. But yeah. I remember when I moved overseas, again, it's that same conversation I had with my friend who told me about the bet my other friends mm-hmm. took. Mm-hmm. I remember telling him during that conversation, I'd been here 6 months, and I told him, I felt like a huge weight had been lifted off of my shoulders that I didn't even know was there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And some of, you know, for myself, a lot of it had to do with the different me's that mm-hmm. were always like, I was different person in this situation, different person with these people, different person with these people. I was always different. And my friends knew me for all that I was, but so much of my day and so many of my days were just being one way. And mm-hmm. then, I can only be myself when I'm with my closest friends. But here, once I moved here, no one knew anything about me. No one knew where I came from. No one knew my personal history. No one gave a crap where I lived or where I grew up or where I matriculated out of. I was just me all the time. And it was so liberating, and I had no idea I was doing it. And mm-hmm. I think it completely changed just the way I interacted with people. I was much more open, much more social. I had more friends here after a couple of weeks than I had back home.
And good friends, not just like friends. It was like, because you all have done this jump, you may not have as much in common as you think maybe at home, but because you have made this jump, there is something really special that you share.
It's like boot camp.
Yeah, yeah. Totally. Yeah.
Because I think it's the older that you get, the less open you become. I found.
You get more selective with your people.
But those friends that I made when I first moved to Korea, you know, I'm still very good friends with some of the lads that I got social with by playing football and just gradually built myself back up. And they, I felt as strongly about those friendships as I did about, you know, my friends back home that I'd known since I was 9 years old. And it was making friends in a way I hadn't done in a long, long time.
Well, it's a completely different way of opening yourself up to people.
Yeah, you have to.
So. Much more vulnerable. Everybody is vulnerable, right? So
now, how long have you guys actually been married now?
Just over a year.
A year?
Yeah, we got married in July last year.
And did you do, so I'm wondering about this because we haven't, Elise and I haven't done any kind of wedding thing, but I know several expat friends who have gone through the wedding thing mm-hmm. and it's multiple weddings. Sometimes there's two, sometimes there's three. You know, I had a friend last year who did three, mm-hmm. one in China, one in his home country, one in her home country. Mm-hmm. How did you guys tackle that?
So we had a party here in Beijing. We were officially married in China, not anywhere else. So we've got the little red books.
Yeah, I love the red book. Those are great souvenirs.
Yeah, it's really fun.
Yeah.
So we had a big party at a bar nearby, and that is the kind of wedding that I think both of us really wanted. Just we wanted a party and we wanted to like give our friends.
Not a lot of planning. Everyone just show up at this bar and we'll drink them dry.
Yeah. And then we tossed around the idea of doing one in America, one in England, but.
That gets expensive really fast.
Oh, that is just scratching the surface of just how expensive it was. Oh my God. But expensive, but also if we would have done it in America, I have a huge Irish Catholic family and Irish Catholic family network and community and friends of the family and friends and friends and cousins. It would have been easily over 400 people just from my side. So.
And I was bringing a strong 40.
So we decided Spain, third country. You don't have to come to China because there's a visa, but Spain, we can make everyone go on holiday. And we.
That also reduces the number.
Oh, yeah.
That's great. Yeah, oh, great. So here's the problem that I had, or that we had, because I immediately thought that way. Like, I thought, let's do a destination wedding. And Elisa was like, yes, we'll do Bali. Mm-hmm. And we found a place. Getting the facility was a little pricey because you wanted a nice hotel and a beach and everything. But then all the costs around it were pretty cheap.
Yeah.
Like Bali is cheap, actually, once you're there. And that would be great. And we could invite as many people as we want because really only 10, 15 people are going to show up, right?
Yep.
Here's the problem. I'd been in Beijing by then for like 7 or 8 years. And
Beijing was coming.
All my friends, as soon as they knew we were getting married, where are we going? Yeah. Where's the wedding?
Where's the party?
Yeah. So it quickly became like, okay, like if we do that, we'll have to be selective and that gets weird because it's just your friends, right? And then, you know, people feel excluded and I didn't have a problem with that, but then it's just, you just don't want to deal with it. And then we started looking at the US, so we'll do it in the US and, you know, started looking at New England because I'm a New Englander and very hardcore New Englander.
And you want to add 2 zeros onto every price.
Oh my God. Well, but actually it didn't matter where we were looking. I looked in her home state. I looked in the state where her parents live. I looked in California just because, I mean, I looked everywhere. It's just, if you got to do a wedding somewhere, people are going to, no matter where we went, people would have to travel.
Yeah.
And it would just be logistically stupid.
Yeah.
And I think the final straw was we went to a friend's wedding here just before we went home. Two summers ago, whatever it is, or the summer after we got actually hitched. And just before then, when we went to a friend's wedding and just seeing her, like she was happy, you know, it was a lovely wedding, but how stressed out she was and just everyone running about the chickens, like chickens with their heads cut off. It was just.
You're a monster. You turned into a monster.
We looked at each other. She was clearly not having fun.
Yeah.
And we looked at each other and said, why do we want any part of this? We don't want any part of this.
Mm. It's really hard because you do want to. It's stressful when you have family that hasn't traveled very much and you do a destination wedding because not only do you have to organize the wedding, and even if we had a wedding planner and we still had to organize this wedding in another language, two other languages because it was in Catalan.
Oh, my God.
Catalan and Spanish. And so we had to help organize the travel from Spanish to English with someone helping us in translating and then also
And I take a very hands-on approach to stuff like that. And because I felt responsible for our guests coming, I wanted them. So I was plotting like where they were staying on Google Maps and doing like routes for the buses, organizing the coaches. And I got to the point and Cara was like, why are you doing all this? Like someone else should take this from us. But we took all that on and, but it was a great time. We were there for a week. We just saw it as, because we'd done the party here and the wedding, when else are we going to get all of our families together? And we just saw it as a celebration of that. And, you know, obviously we gave our families a beautiful wedding, but it was so nice to have everyone there.
It's interesting you say that because it really ends up being about them.
Yeah.
It's not about you.
It's when the cousins show up that you're like, I've never met you. It's like, Mom. This is not a family reunion. This is, what are you doing? So I also made the stupid idea, not stupid. I had the idea of going on a road trip with my best friend and we were stoked all year, but then it got closer to the wedding and I turned into this evil human and I would just like shrivel up like a raisin in the car. She'd be like, what is wrong with you? I'm so sorry. I cannot handle this. So it's a lot more stress than I think I wish upon anybody.
Yeah, I'm kind of glad we didn't do it. We may do something in the future, kind of anniversary.
So party at a bar.
But
party at a bar. That's all you need.
Yeah. And also the wonderful thing about not having done it is once you you know, as you get further away from the fact that, like, you're now legally married. I think we've been legally married over two years now. The further away you get from the fact that you're legally married, the less you think about, oh, yeah, we never had a wedding. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just not even a thing anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's always a complicated. I really should talk to more couples on expat couples, because that's something that is really unique to our cohort. Like, mm-hmm, is this idea of the, not just bicultural weddings as an event, but bicultural weddings as a logistical exercise.
Yeah.
It's just so interesting.
Because mm-hmm, we have people, as you say, that you make friends here and they wanted to go. They have the time off because they're teachers predominantly. That's who our friends have been. And they're coming from all over the world, you know, from Europe, from the States, from Asia. But it was wonderful. We went to Barcelona maybe 4 or 5 days before our wedding. And we
rented an apartment and just our
we friends rented an apartment came. There, and like all of our friends who we hadn't seen in a while that we'd met abroad all flew in, and we were just welcoming them. Like the hour after hour, someone was turning up with their suitcase, and that bit was fantastic.
Oh, that's awesome.
It was the best. It was the best part, was everyone crashing in the apartment together. Like, my brothers got to meet all of our friends from overseas, and everyone just, it was great because like hit 10 o'clock. People were still rolling in. We were just at the bar down the street. You know, it was great. Yeah, it was very us. So it was good.
And our parents and siblings could put faces to people that we talked about over like the last six, 7 years.
Yeah.
So that was great.
Yeah. It's fun.
That's great. One of the you mentioned all the friends who are overseas and from all over the place. One of the great things about living in a place like Beijing is that it's such a transient city and there's so many people who rotate in and out. I mean, I've got friends all over the world now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, we're going to take a road trip. Hopefully my wife and I will take a road trip across the U.S. next summer. And the lovely thing about her being a teacher is
she has summer.
Yeah. Not quite as much summer, depending on, you know, what international school you're teaching at. Mm-hmm. But, you know, she's got the summers and we can take these lovely vacations. And we have friends everywhere. Mm-hmm. We could do a road trip across Europe and we could just visit all of our friends, you know, mm-hmm, in all these wonderful places.
Yeah.
You know, we've already talked about, you know, we even have some friends here in Beijing who are planning to leave next year. So they've said, yes, when we leave, we'll be here. So this will be a vacation spot for you.
Yeah.
They're very explicit.
Yeah. You know,
it's been really nice.
Come and visit, please.
Yes. Yeah. Which is lovely. Mm-hmm. And, it's one of the things about being an expat or a migrant that is kind of unadvertised. You find out about it later.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're like, oh, there's this whole other community out there and they live everywhere too. And I know people everywhere now.
Yeah. And the people that you meet and I found are not the sort of people that go abroad, dip their toe in and then go back. They'll go to different places. We've met people that have gone off to all kinds of schools here, there and everywhere. And you're right. It just opens up. The world becomes a lot smaller and you just think, we can go there. We can go there. It's glorious.
Mm-hmm. That's another thing about, you know, you as a couple is you're both teachers. So this is something that Alisa and I are just kind of starting to think about because she's just finished her master's program. So now it's the time of year where you start thinking about your next contract and we don't know where that's going to be. You know, it could be here in Beijing, could
anywhere.
Be somewhere else, could be anywhere. And it's a little overwhelming.
Yep. Yes.
So when you guys were looking for a place, when you were still in South Korea, you knew you kind of wanted to move together and you were looking for a place. What is that process like? And I'm asking not just for myself, because there are people listening who don't kind of know this. Like, it's a different breed of expat that is teachers, because there's this kind of cyclical thing. Like, every couple few years, you can go anywhere you want.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How do you approach that thought process?
So in Korea, we were still quite, I guess you could say young, but very inexperienced. So there was no way we could have one of the, there's paid agencies that you can pay into like $200 and they will help vet you and your resume into all the big international schools. But we both worked at after school programs. So we could only do another TEFL, not only, but we had to do another TEFL job, which meant an EFL school, which at the time was, You could go to Japan, but it was really hard to get a job without a lot of experience. You could stay in Korea very easily. You could go to China. They were like calling across the sea asking for you to come. And you could go.
Teaching English here is a huge industry.
Yeah. And we knew we wanted to stay in Asia as well. Although we'd done a year in Korea, we were open to staying in Korea, but kind of wanted another experience as well.
But we did not want to go to China.
No.
It came up like very organically, but we were just like, nope, that's the place we don't want to go. Let's try somewhere else.
And I think that was born out of, there was just so many schools advertising jobs in China.
It seemed fake, right?
It was like Korea was more, even if you got there and your school wasn't great, your country's not that big. The city's not that big. And you can network and you can easily transition to another school. We were looking at China and it was so overwhelming to think.
How big? It was so big.
Yeah.
It can't be this many.
Yeah. Which city do you pick? Yeah, everything. Yeah, it was very overwhelming.
But then we went through an agency that a couple of other people had used. And then we kind of just, it had overwhelmed us and it was causing us a lot of stress. And I think having spoken to a lot of expats in the same position, they just think, sod it, let's just do this one. It's just easier. We'll go there. And then if we don't like it,
we'll go.
It's fine. And we had that freedom to be able to do that. But it did get to the point where we were looking at so many places and overthinking it that we just went for it.
So how do you think about your future? Do you have a list of places you want to go? Do you have kind of a checklist? Do you have an idea of how long you want to live on the road? I mean, this lifestyle or this career path offers kind of an amazing cornucopia of opportunities. You literally can go to any country. You don't have to be in Asia. You can go anywhere.
Yeah.
Do you have, like, how do you think about your future in this career?
I think we're in it to win it. We'll be in it for a while.
China has been very good to us because if we look at where we were career-wise when we entered China and where we are now, we'd only done a year of teaching and in an academy. Didn't know whether that was a career we wanted to do, just knew that that was a short-term career that would get us from A to B.
And that's something a lot of expats do. I'll just go and teach. My experience is people are doing it in China, but I'll go teach at some English school for a year or two. And once I'm there, I'll find the thing I really want to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of people did like projects while they were doing, because you only worked probably like 12 hours a week. Mm-hmm. It was very, very easy. So people kind of had the time and mental space to explore.
Which is fine. But then it didn't really push us like we wanted. And we did fall in love with teaching. But China has given us the financial security for both of us to retrain, get our teaching licenses.
You get your master's?
Yes, master's. You can call me Master Gleason.
Which is how we know each other, because we, just by happenstance, you met my wife and the same master's program. And you didn't even know you were both in Beijing and teaching at schools that are next to each other.
Yep. Like down the road. I remember I sat next to one of her friends in the program this summer. It's like, that is a Chinese. What is that? Qingmiao? Oh my God. What? You worked at Beanstalk? And the girl that had the notebook did not. She worked in Thailand. But then she told me who did and figured that out. But the coolest thing about that program, the master's program, is that there are people from all over the world. It gets you excited again. It's international teacher camp, right? So you just get, I got to nerd out massively on curriculum and everything else. But I got so excited to meet people that were, you know, jumping off the same kind of diving post, like just like taking the risk in other countries and other continents and seeing what it was like. It's really fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And once you hear those stories, it's similar to what gave you the confidence to go in the first place. Now we hear, you know, our friends have moved to different parts, you know, whether it's Europe, South America, and you see them thriving. And now we're in a position where we have the qualifications, we have, you know, the experience behind us that China has allowed us to have, that we could go anywhere. But again, that presents another problem where that's then, where do you go? So that's where we're at currently. Yeah.
It's a really good problem to have, but it is a problem.
Yeah. Yeah. It's stressful. I think I've had a good cry about twice in the last week about it. Where am I going?
This is the time of year where that happens.
Yeah. I think all of my, you know, and you can feel it at school because it's really, really fun at school, or, you know, like it's quite relaxed. And then all of a sudden it just gets tense because people are asked to turn in their resignation letters or they're re-signing contracts. And so this air, it goes from like, how are you? What are you doing this weekend? You know, for a couple months to, what do you think about doing next year? Where are you going? Are you leaving? What's your plan? I think I amassed that twice a day at school.
The, you know, this is, we've actually been going for a while, so we won't go get into this, yeah. But this is, this could be a whole other series of podcasts. Yeah. I mean, I'm just at, and I'm looking at it from the outside. So like when you said it's like, you know, teacher camp, it's, I got to go.
To teacher camp.
I didn't go, but I mean, I went for like one day the last couple of years, and I went to the graduation this year, and I kind of got to see everyone, and everyone's nerding out and studying together, and it's just really, I'm kind of seeing that I'm getting into this subculture thing, and I'm not the teacher, but my wife is, and I see how it's affecting her in the right way, but just I kind of see how she interacts and the cycle of the year, like what you said about this is the time of year when people are asking, oh, are you staying? Are you going? Like, what are you doing? And it's this weird thing in the subculture. It's so fascinating. And I'm enjoying the experience of kind of seeing it for the first time this year. And I really want to explore it more. So I thank you so much for sitting down with me. This has been a very abbreviated run through your lives. I hope it wasn't painful, but this is it's so refreshing to speak to a couple that have an experience of meeting overseas and coming together overseas, and it ends up happily.
Which is, you hear a lot of the other way. Yeah.
You do. A lot of, you know, crash and burn relationships. I mean, it happens everywhere in life, but here it can be especially bad because if you've moved somewhere for someone and.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of pressures.
Yeah, a lot of pressures. Yeah. Well, I'm glad it worked out well for you guys.
Thank you very much. Yeah.
Thanks so much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
So there you have it. They are such a great couple, don't you think? Thanks so much for listening, everybody. If you have any comments about this episode or any questions, or if you have suggestions for people to interview in the future, you can find me at migratorypatterns@migrationmedia.net. You can also leave a comment for us on Twitter. We're @migrationmedia_. Thanks so much, and we'll see you next week.